This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 22nd of November 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 22nd of November, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: talks on new park and ride, officers dissatisfied with pay, says union, and City College staff join strike over cutbacks. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was talks on new park and ride. Civic chiefs have revealed that plans to bring a park and ride to Barton Farm could be halted if progress is taken on a major facility to the north of the city. Long-mooted plans are expected to bring a park and ride light to the development, also known as King's Barton, but discussions are also progressing to bring a major facility which could be built on land at the edge of the city or near a major motorway. Currently, the City Council are in talks with CALA about providing spaces for commuters on the 2000 home scheme, but at King's Barton Forum meeting earlier this month, the strategic director, Steve Tilbury, said that the authority is now looking at a different avenue to provide much-needed spaces. Mr. Tilbury said, "We are now looking at the operation of a full-scale park and ride to the north. If, as a result of work with the movement strategy, a location and ways and means of providing a full-scale park and ride to the north can be found, we will talk to CALA about the park and ride light facility as to whether that is still required." Councillors were told that there is no available space within the King's Barton development for a full park and ride similar to those to the south and east of the city, which currently provide 1,861 spaces. The meeting was told that money through funding from developers is available for parking for the parking facility. "It is not a complex operation. We are not commissioning or tendering for services. It should be relatively straightforward to make this happen," Mr. Tilbury said. CALA Senior Design and Planning Manager Viv Hill said, "We are aware of the joint Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council work on the movement strategy." Mr. Hill said, "We await the results of this study and or recommendations for the north of the city." Part of the wider infrastructure delivery for our site at King's Barton includes planning consent for a 200-vehicle park and ride, which we are required to deliver by the 650th occupation. It remains CALA Homes' intention to implement this consent and build the park and ride in line with our planning obligations, unless through our continued collaboration engagement with WCC and HCC, as we build out the residential phases of development, an alternative solution is identified. Previous potential sites listed for the new park and ride included Andover Road North, Eastern Lane, which leads onto Junction 9 of the M3 at Winnell, and Alsford Road, which heads out of the city towards the A31. However, space on the A31 appears to be limited to green land in the countryside. If Eastern Lane site was chosen, it would likely come after the major changes set to be made to Junction 9 by Highways England in 2021-22. If plans do progress, it is understood that the park and ride will be more than 5 years away.
Officers dissatisfied with pay, says union. Most of Hampshire police officers are dissatisfied with their pay and believe morale is low within the force, a new survey suggests. More than three quarters of the Hampshire Constabulary officers responding to the Police Federation of England and Wales pay and morale survey, 84%, said they are dissatisfied with their pay, and the same amount said that they felt morale within the force is low or very low, an increase of 1% since last year's survey. Meanwhile, 82% of respondents felt that they were worse off financially than they were 5 years ago, and 17% reported never or almost never having enough money to cover all their essentials. More than three quarters, 80%, of those who responded said they felt morale within the force was very low or extremely low. Also, 58% said their own morale is low, a 3% increase on the 2018 figures. Hampshire Police Federation Chairman Alex Charge said the officer remuneration figures were of real concern. He said the real area that officers in Hampshire are struggling with is finances. It's a significant issue. A lot of that is about how much it costs to live in Hampshire, and we don't have any pay mechanisms that recognise that. We've got £1,000 South East Regional Allowance, which hasn't been changed since 2001 when it was introduced. We've worked with the Chief of Officer Group, and it is now with the Police and Crime Commissioners, PCC, for decision around index linking the allowance, so there will be at least a cost of living increase. The allowance can be up to £2,000 for us in Hampshire. However, it has got to be linked to recruitment and retention, and now we can't evidence a recruitment and retention problem. It's never been uplifted, so we've gone to the force with a view of saying that every year it's becoming worth less. It's worth about £600. We think that there should be an uplift to recognise that, and then in the future it should be index linked. We are working regionally to try and influence the NPCC, National Police Chief Council, about their pay review to recognise the South East Regional Allowance as a cost of living increase. It's cost a lot to live in the South East, and it should recognise it the same as London Waiting. Other results include that 62% of respondents from the force said they would not recommend joining the police to others, and 11% said that they had an intention to leave the police service either within the next 2 years or as soon as possible. Mr. Charge said that the PCC is supportive of the issues, adding, "He is supportive of the bid we've put in. I would say it needs to be prioritised against other things."
City College staff join the strike over the cutbacks. Staff at Peter Simmons College went on strike this week to demand more funding for their students and colleges. Members of the National Education Union, the NEU, took to the picket line on Wednesday to air their concerns over severe cuts to further education, joining other colleges around the country calling for action. David Francis, NEU co-rep at the college and a chemistry teacher, said, "We are not just doing it for ourselves, we are doing it for the whole sector. In real terms, we've had funding cuts every year since 2010. The cumulative effect is quite severe. Other colleges where cuts have been made mean redundancies and very severe cuts in courses." Teachers were also striking over pay, with Mr. Francis saying that most have seen relatively low pay rises or none at all over the last 9 years. "Most people become teachers to do a good job and do their absolute best for pupils. But it's a question whether they can afford to stay in the area, and keeping good staff is becoming difficult," Mr. Francis added. "It is grossly unfair how we are being treated." The college remained open during the strike, and management said that the majority of teaching continued as normal. Principal Sarah Russell said, "At Peter Simmons, we are proud that against a background of funding pressures right across all public services, we have been able to maintain the impressive range of subjects, the enrichment and strong pastoral support available to our students, as well as the outstanding results that we are renowned for." But the strike had got the support of pupils, with the student union voting to support the action and some students staying away from campus. Nationally, the NEU has said, "Teaching staff numbers and support staff posts have fallen significantly due to cuts, while at the same time student numbers have risen, which is putting a strain on colleges. Karen Williams of the National Education Union said, NEU members across Hampshire have a very clear message for government, and their anger is growing. Every day they see the effects of shameful cuts to 16 to 19 funding, which have gone on much longer and much deeper than in any other school sector. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of some of the staff on strike and standing outside the Peter Simmons College.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bridge, Juliet Ann Bridge, who died on the 30th of October. Catmull, Josephine Maud Catmull, who died peacefully on the 8th of November, aged 90. Crozier, Joan Elizabeth Crozier, known as Floss, died peacefully at Harrier Grange Nursing Home, aged 88. Gould, William James Gould, died peacefully at home in Alsford, aged 83. Guppy, Judith Rosina Guppy, died peacefully at St John's Nursing Home at Rownhams, aged 81. Haslam, Earlis May Haslam, née Morgan, died peacefully on the 7th of November. House, Christopher House, died peacefully on the 11th of November, aged 74. Riggs, Alan Riggs, died on the 5th of November at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Roach, Margaret Mary Roach, died at Winchester Hospital on the 15th of October, aged 77. Sharp, Frederick Charles Sharp, died peacefully at home on the 3rd of November, aged 91. Shone, John Wellesley Shone, died after a short illness on the 2nd of November, aged 80. Stevens, Ralph Hansford Stevens, died on the 5th of November at West Holme Care Home, aged 86. And Thatcher, David Henry Thatcher, died on the 15th of November, aged 64. And now we follow that with a Christian comment read by Andrew, please.
And this week's Christian comment is titled Demons, Thieves and Philip Pullman. Whilst on holiday in Scotland, I tried to plan ahead both for this article and also for the service I will be taking this coming Sunday. I kept my eyes and ears open for ideas and inspiration. Sunday, the 24th of November, is the last Sunday in this lectionary year, as a new year starts the following week with Advent Sunday, the beginning of the 4 weeks' preparation for Christmas. In many churches, it is now celebrated as the Feast of Christ the King. This is a relatively new festival and was instigated in 1925 by the Catholic Church in honour of Jesus Christ as Lord over all creation. Originally, it was celebrated on the last Sunday of October, but in 1969 it was moved to the last Sunday of the liturgical year as its theme see year on. In reality, it has the same theme as Ascension Day, but magnified. The gospel reading set for the day is the story of the two thieves who were crucified on either side of Jesus, when he has a sign attached to him saying, King of the Jews. And yet, despite this fact, one of the thieves recognizes that there is something special about him, and that the situation is very unjust, for while he and the other thief have done something wrong and been convicted because of this, Jesus is innocent and has done no wrong. The other thief mocks Jesus and says, he was a pretty useless sort of king as he couldn't even save himself. His companion, recognizing the real truth, begs Jesus to forgive him when he comes into his kingdom, and Jesus responds saying he will be with him in paradise. I thought quite hard about this to see how I could add something to this story to make it a bit different and yet relevant for people today. As a psychiatrist, I have spent much of my working life studying people and their personalities. Too big a subject to cover in depth, but interesting to reflect that even the two thieves, whilst having their crimes in common, are very different in their personalities and consequently in their reactions to the situation they find themselves in. Many people will be watching on the television the fantasy His Dark Materials, based on the trilogy by Philip Pullman. In this series, the characters all have animal demons. Not demons as such. These demons are the external physical manifestation of the person's inner self that takes the form of an animal. Many Christians were against these books when they were first written, as Pullman is a professed atheist, but some are beginning to see more in them. A recent report in the Catholic Herald said he was more of an agnostic, still searching for answers. The story is an allegory reflecting much of the problems in our world today. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. There was a massive postbag in the Chronicle this week. We've thinned it down a little because of the forthcoming election, I think, has increased the postbag. So we've thinned it down to a selection of 9 letters. We hope you approve of those. And Nikki has the first.
I'll start with Need for Pavilion. Excuse me. Sir, the Winchester Pavilion Project, the charity fundraising for a new pavilion at North Walls Recreation Ground, very much welcomes Councillor Malcolm Prince's comments, as reported in this paper on October the 31st. It is essential that good facilities for outdoor sports at this location will be available once the nearby River Park Leisure Centre closes in early 2021. The clock is ticking fast. The pavilion design was given planning permission in early 2018 and building work needs to start soon. Unfortunately, this week's town forum meeting, at which pavilions both at North Walls and King George V playing fields were to be discussed, has been cancelled. Purda is now in place due to the forthcoming general election. Hopefully the topic will be discussed at the next town forum meeting in January 2020. Meanwhile, the pavilion project continues to build on its fundraising success. Over £85,000 has been raised this year, taking the group to 80% of its target, with over £200,000 in grant applications still pending. The fundraising team is keen to close off a match funding opportunity by the end of this year and is asking local businesses, groups and individuals for small to medium-sized donations, which will immediately be doubled. To help, please email mike@thepavilionproject.com or visit the www.thepavilionproject.com for more information. And that was from Mike Caldwell, The Pavilion Project, Nuns Road, Hyde, Winchester.
No respect. Sir, I have received a Liberal Democratic flyer declaring that Joe Swinston is the Prime Minister we deserve. That is certainly true if we vote for a party which has no respect for democracy and which has shown it would do precisely the same thing again if a vote on any issue did not suit their political ends. And it was this party who were energetically calling for a referendum in the first place, with 7 out of their then 8 MPs voting for the EU referendum bill. Now they refuse to accept the referendum and the campaign on the Remain platform. How they have the gall to do so and claim they are democratic defies belief. Liberal Democrats, delete Democrats, and sadly their local candidate, Paula Ferguson, follows the party line and fully supports ignoring the referendum vote. Personable she may be, but she has a political novice and one who does not support the democratic decisions. Winchester deserves better than this. And that's from Roger Davey, Rosemary Close, Blue Ball Hill. I think it might be Blue Bell Hill, Winchester.
And equally challenging, we have a letter sent in by Ted Hart, which is titled Sunday Charges. Sir, I noticed in the Chronicle, November 14, that local traders are concerned about the possible introduction of parking charges on a Sunday. I made my views clear in a letter recently, and that this idea is suicidal for the local economy. What appears to be more worrying is that Councillor Anna Weir has some influence on the final decision. If she would care to visit Winchester on a Sunday, she would notice that it's the only day of the week without severe congestion. It's even possible to get from the Broadway to the Winnell roundabout in under an hour. Perhaps, as a cabinet member for the local economy, she should focus on her job and look after local business, rather than using air quality as an insipid excuse to ruin it. And that was sent in by Ted Hart, Maitrey Close, Badger Farm.
Fears for Seat by it's Ray Green. Sir, on November the 11th, I received a letter from the chairman of the local Conservative Party urging me to support Steve Brine in the forthcoming election. As a party member, I'm prepared to do anything to support the cause, but Steve Brine, in my and others' opinions, should not be representing Winchester Conservatives. Over recent years, his public declarations, including in this publication, and his private actions have not been the same. His anti-party actions led to him losing the whip, and he regained it only by typical self-serving behaviour. Despite time being short, I have urged the chairman to dump him and propose a candidate who genuinely believes in the opportunities Brexit will bring. Although confident the Conservatives will win a national majority, I fear that with Steve Brine we will lose a seat we won handsomely last time. And that from Ray Green, Alexandra Terrace, Winchester.
And now for something completely different. On a roll. Sir, they say that things come in threes. Well, I think the City Council are on a multi-roll. This week's Chronicle, with the three planning cock-ups, must make the council hierarchy wince. First it's Silver Hill, that is going on for more years than one can remember. Now Station Approach, which has lost the council £5 million bonus. Has anyone resigned over that? Now we have the University Hospital Southampton finding that proper procedure was not been taken. This is all well and good, but it's the rate-paying public that are paying for the incompetence of the City Council, and what redress do we have? Just throw another few pounds at the problem, no one will know. Another city faux pas, the taxi drivers have joined together to ask the council why half of Hampshire taxis can sign into Winchester when it's supposed to be the Winchester district only. This has been going on for more years than they can remember. Funny how no one has been brought to account for any of these serious actions. Perhaps the council is not fit for the purpose and needs new people that know their job. Robert Whittier, Church Lane, Easton.
And I'm afraid our council's not doing very well this week. This letter was sent in by Simon Lever, and it's titled Station Approach. The Station Approach project, originally planned by the Conservative-controlled City Council, later modified to address issues such as the height of the structure, and later passed by the present council, would have attracted millions of pounds in projected revenue and created hundreds of new jobs. All interested parties had an opportunity to present any concerns. This most positive project has been stopped in its tracks at the cost of Winchester residents and other interested organisations, creating uncertainty and questioning trust. Delays escalate construction costs immensely, and that is without the loss of £5 million as the direct result of seemingly orchestrated delays. Such a travesty is beyond belief. Companies have been informed that any plans to open offices and shops should be shelved. Chronicle, November 14. An even further loss of revenue and employment. Station Approach is the third major project to have been shelved and at enormous cost. Short and long-term benefits being lost are a travesty of trust. Fact. This worthwhile project had been given the go-ahead to the benefit of all. In addition, the railway station's location providing environmentally suitable access facilities. The benefits of proceeding with Station Approach, as agreed by all parties in the council, are obvious to all, but seemingly not grasped or understood by a number of individuals, including Councillor Gottlieb. One can only wonder what other sensible and positive plans for Winchester will be aborted by potentially spurious reasons where the costs of delays and loss of grants are in no way directed at those responsible for defying democratically agreed improvements to our great city. Indeed, what on earth is going on? Let us trust that common sense and positivity will win the day. And that was sent in by Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And from Hugh Lumby, Garden Fears. Sir, I am concerned that the Liberal Democratic administration of Winchester City Council are considering charging for garden waste collection. This is free at present for the first bag. It is a popular service and is certainly used by many houses in the countryside. In my opinion, introducing charging would be a backward step. Separate charging is regressive and hits those least able to pay the hardest. It will also encourage avoidance. Fly tipping is already an issue and this will make it worse. So to introduce charges in the face of the climate change emergency would be a mistake. Let's not do it. And that's from Hugh Lumby, Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council, High Street, Meonstoke.
Waste of time? Sir, I had occasion to ring 101 on Sunday, November the 3rd, to report a suspicious vehicle which I had seen and noted on the evening of October the 31st. My suspicions had been aroused due to the time and the place where I saw the vehicle. I was able to jot the number down because I had a torch so could see to write. Having spoken to one of my neighbours, she checked DVLA and posted it on social media. The vehicle turned out to be uninsured and not taxed. I live near a motorcycle dealer who has had bikes stolen twice recently, so I thought that this may be someone else or the same people trying again. The response I got from the helpline was not helpful. I was questioned by the operator as if I was a crank. When I explained the situation, she said she was in Southampton. I thought Hampshire Police liaised, as it was the Hampshire Police 101 I spoke to. At the end of the conversation, she said she would log it in. My impression at the end was, am I wasting my time trying to help? Do those operators need better training? Does anyone else feel the same as I do? I have not written to the police regarding this, as I expect I would get some negative response. If they wish to check the conversation, I expect it will have been recorded. And that was from Martin R. Hubbard of Cheriton in Alsford.
And following on from that letter, which was titled A Waste of Time, this one's titled A Waste of Money. Sir, I find it very hard to have any confidence in the councils. We are quite often informed that they have to make significant savings here and there, cut our services for the council tax, which the council tax supposedly pays for. Now it appears that they want to spend £30 million on the redevelopment of Station Approach with cafe and shops. Why? We need our services, and we need them in place, not wasting taxes on such. The price of parking will keep the public out, plus many shops are closing due to very high overheads. And that came in from Jeff N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
Thank you. That concludes the letters, and now we're going to step back in time. Nikki.
100 years ago, Saturday, November the 22nd, 1919. The Venerable W. H. Hutton, M.A., D.D., D.C.L., the newly appointed dean, paid a brief visit to Winchester on Tuesday. He went to the cathedral for a few minutes, but his principal purpose was to see over the deanery. The installation of Dr. Hutton will take place at a special service at Winchester Cathedral at 3 o'clock on the afternoon of December the 18th. In other columns of this edition, we report the death of Mr. Councillor Hinckman, following the injuries he received in the collision at Pitt Corner. Also, an inquest on Mrs. Lawrence, aged 74, who met her death accidentally by walking, as was shown, into a motor car on the North Walls. To these fatalities, yet another has to be added. On Saturday evening, Private R.W. Perkins of the Army Service Corps, aged 18, stationed at Pitt Corner Camp, was walking into Winchester when he was knocked down by a military service motor car on the Rumsey Road.
And 50 years ago, on Saturday, November the 22nd, 1969, two articles. During the 3 days which the Apollo astronauts... During the 3 days which the Apollo astronauts took to get 250,000 miles to the moon, people in South Hampshire travelled more than that distance by public transport. This is one of the more light-hearted but significant facts that has emerged from the survey of transport made by the technical unit of South Hampshire Plan. All aspects of public transport were studied by the team in their analysis of public transport needs for the future. They learnt that the vast majority of bus trips are intercity journeys in Portsmouth and Southampton, and that their average length is between 1.5 to 2 miles. Bus journeys, they say, are largely concerned with work and shopping, the former accounting for 35% of the trips and the latter 24%. And the second item is, the new emergency and outpatient wing at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital went into full operation last week for the first time when the renovated outpatient section was opened. The emergency unit had been operating since July, but the facilities have now been extended to cover the outpatients as well. The fully equipped modern building, connected to the main hospital by a covered way, is now a well-integrated unit capable of coping with anything from burnt fingers and minor car accidents to major disasters. It cost the Wessex Regional Hospital Board £70,000 to provide the 7 clinical suites, 3 operating theatres and equipment treating the estimated 75,000 patients a year. 3 doctors are on permanent standby, assisted by a staff of 12 trained nurses at full strength, and many social and backup staff.
And from 25 years ago, Friday, November the 18th, 1994. The Pong from Winchester's Stinkpot Hill is here to stay. Southern Water's drainage manager, John Withington, said this week that there is no total cure for eliminating the odour from the city's sewage treatment works at Morstead Road. Even with the most modern plant available, it only performs effectively between quite distinct odour bands, he said. Low odour can be significantly reduced. It can never be totally eliminated, irrespective of the treatment process. Mr. Withingham was replying to a complaint from Bar End Road resident Anthony Lustard, who said that he and his wife were forced out of their home for several hours recently because of the awful stench from the works. Mr. Lustard, a civil engineer who has supplied major control systems to the water industry, said he was amazed that Southern Water was unable to do anything, considering the amount of investment on so-called technical improvements. Mr. Whittington said it would cost in excess of £10 million to install comprehensive odour control measures at the site, and revenue applications would be considerable. Based on complaints level of less than 3 per annum over the last 2.5 years, it is extremely difficult to defend such expenditure when set against other priorities. The second article would in fact be still true today. With village names vanishing from church registers because of the high cost of homes, a Hampshire vicar has urged more help for homeless young families. Michael Welch's plea fell on sympathetic ears when, as chairman of Bere Forest Housing Association, he told Bishops Waltham's Rotarians and members of their parent club, Hamble Valley, about his group's work in the Meon Valley. Mr. Welch, vicar of Swanmore, said that an important section of the rural population was seriously disadvantaged and that the need for low-cost housing was one of the greatest needs in our society today. Many young people who grow up locally and get married find there is nowhere to live in the area. Their income is insufficient to buy, shared equity housing is unavailable, and there is nothing to rent, so they have to move away to towns and live in flats. As a result, Mr. Welch and his fellow clergy are finding that the traditional local names are fast disappearing from their registers, to be replaced by more affluent commuters.
Thank you. Now we come back to the present day, and Nikki has the editorial comment, please.
Which is headed, "Low morale in police benefits no one." On the one hand, we have the Prime Minister making promises of 20,000 new police officers on the streets and shelling out £35 million to help crack down on knife crime. On the other hand, we have the news that police bosses have called for a pay rise following the revelation that officers are dissatisfied and have low morale. The story in page 30 also carried the worrying suggestion that a significant number of those responding to a survey said they wanted to leave Hampshire Constabulary within 2 years or as soon as possible. It goes without saying that the police are crucially important to society and deserve respect. There may be some who will point out, understandably, that staff in many walks of life suffer from low morale and low pay. But two wrongs don't make a right, and having police with low morale and low motivation is in no one's interests. One would hope that the politicians of any party would keep to their word and that having new officers brought into the county might help ease the burden on current overworked staff.
Thank you. And now we have first person, Norma, thank you.
And George Hayter writes about the best seat in Winchester. The Buttercross was my friend's idea. I wanted to book a table in the restaurant so we could meet there, but he thought the stone monument in Winchester High Street was a better place to meet before going to lunch. And of course he was right. Every Winchester resident knows the unmissable Buttercross. It's a four-storey stone spire that looks like a Gothic rocket poised for blast-off from its steep-stepped launch pad opposite Specsavers. I admire people who sit on the Buttercross. In summer, you see tourists and visiting French school kids happily perched on the five octagonal steps that ring the ancient cross, despite it being the least comfortable seating in Winchester. Have you tried it? Each step is high and has room for little more than a toe of your shoe, offering a challenging ascent of shallow shelves rather than stately stairs. When balancing awkwardly on one of the higher ledges, one can feel that one is making a spectacle of oneself. Adorning the much-loved monument in that way tends to get you noticed. As I approached the Buttercross for our rendezvous that lunchtime, I saw that my friend was not standing by the Buttercross. He was sitting on it. That's brave, I thought, although admittedly he did have both feet on the ground. He was sitting on the lowest step. He stood to greet me, and before we moved off to the restaurant, I put my hand on one of the steps and the stone felt cold and a bit damp. My admiration increased. You need fortitude if you want to take the weight off your feet at the Buttercross in winter. But there's no doubt it makes for a stylish and memorable rendezvous. The Buttercross is the heart of Winchester. It occupies a cosy nook at the centre of the town, and it has been there for 600 years. Its popular name may derive from the market traders of dairy goods who had their pitchers nearby. Its posher names are the High Cross or City Cross. It almost disappeared in 1770 when the authorities sold it. When the purchaser tried to dismantle the landmark, townspeople rioted to prevent its removal. Because of its relatively delicate spindly structure, inevitably bits have been had to be replaced, notably by the Victorians, so it's difficult to know how much of what we see now was there in the early 15th century. But little of antiquity can survive British weather intact, and the albeit patched-up contribution of the Buttercross to Winchester's enviable historical continuity is thrilling. I would guess that Winchester Cathedral weighs about 100,000 tonnes and the Buttercross about 10. Despite being 10,000 times less substantial, I reckon the plucky little cross rivals the great 11th century church as most loved edifice in Winchester. Other towns provide only a park benches, which may be more comfy than the shallow ledges of our ancient stone cross, but million times less interesting. When you perch on a well-worn Buttercross stone, consider the countless generations of Winchester folk who have rested there before you. Doubtless those choosing the higher levels have always tended to be young. Among them has been film star Colin Firth, who told me at his honorary graduation ceremony that he spent much of his adolescence on the Buttercross. His parents taught at what became Winchester University and was then called King Alfred's College. Colin liked hanging out on the Buttercross, but despite having academic parents, he didn't like school. At Montgomery of Alamein School, now part of King's School, he found lessons mostly boring. I'm glad my friend and I didn't meet in the restaurant. Emerging from Zizzy's after the meal, I look back at the good old Buttercross. There's no better place to meet, even if you're not quite tough enough to sit on it.
Thank you. And now we have a couple of items from Belgarum, Andrew.
And this one's titled The Honours Board Behind the Times, and probably needs a little bit of explanation, and it's accompanied by a photograph. So the photograph shows the Honours Board at Hampshire County Council, and it shows the names of various individuals, and the key thing being that the last date on it is 1999. So now to the text. It's rather old-fashioned and redolent of Edwardian public schools. The Honours Board in the foyer of the offices on Castle Avenue lists the leaders of Hampshire County Council, its chairman and senior officials over the decades. But it has seems to have ceased being upgraded. Late Ken Thornber, which is the last name on the photograph, stood down in 2013 to be replaced by Roy Perry, who earlier this year was succeeded by Keith Manns. So clearly nobody is updating the Honours Board, which is a shame, because although it is old-fashioned, Belgarum thinks it's actually rather classy. And the second point is about the silent enemy. And this is based on a photograph of the walls at the Weirs, showing the spread of invasive and damaging plants. These medieval walls on the Weirs faced sieges in the Middle Ages, but the world of weeds is doing more damage than slingshot and arrow. In the 1990s, Belgarum remembers seeing workmen working for English Heritage spending several weeks removing much of the plants, including buddleia and red valerian. It would appear that those days of maintenance are long gone, but perhaps when the wall starts to fall down, the authorities will renew their efforts.
Thank you. Now we've got the announcements, and we start with what's on. First is a couple of concerts on Saturday the 30th of November in the United Church in Jury Street at 7 p.m. The Bishop's Waltham Bells and Handbell Ringers. It's a free concert, and there will be refreshments available during the event. On Monday the 9th of December at Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m, the Peter Simmons College Christmas Carol Concert. It's carols and readings from staff and students. Again, it's free and all are welcome. An advance notice of a couple of pantomimes. Firstly, at the Theatre Royal, Dick Whittington will be this year's pantomime, and it'll be performed from Saturday the 30th of November through till Sunday the 5th of January. If you want details on that one, tickets can be got from the box office on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. The second pantomime is Kingsworthy's Worthy Players, and they're hosting Jack and the Beanstalk in December. I haven't got dates at the moment, but some new corny jokes have been added to the familiar script, and tickets can be available online at www.theworthyplayers.co.uk. That's all lowercase, www.theworthyplayers.co.uk. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 22nd of November at 7:33 a.m. and begins at 4:09 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 27th of November, it ends at 7:40 a.m. and begins at 4:05 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And that number appears on the key fob attached to your memory stick. So now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And now a very important one. Winchester Talking Newspaper is seeking new home. Winchester Talking Newspaper, which produces sound recordings of the Hampshire Chronicle for blind and partially sighted people, is looking for a new base. The charity was formed in 1989 and has been recording the Hampshire Chronicle ever since. The first recordings on cassette tapes were made in an annex to one of the members' homes, but later moved to a recording studio at Winchester Hospital Radio at the RHCH. When the hospital was being redeveloped 9 years ago, WTN was offered a room by Richard Steele and Partners, funeral directors. Expansion of Steele's in 2018 required a relocation, and a temporary solution was to move back to the original annex in Wanston, where the recordings are currently produced. However, this facility is available only for another year, and new premises need to be found before the end of 2020. The recording studio needs to be housed in a room measuring about 15 square metres, with access to power and the ability to install a telephone line. Access by volunteers to record and post the recording to listeners would be required a couple of times a week. WTN says it's very flexible as to location, as the volunteers have experience in recording both in the city centre and in a rural environment. And there's a very nice photograph, sadly not of us, but a rival team, seated round our green baize table with our microphones.
Candidates to go head to head. An election hustings has been arranged for Winchester for next Monday, with all the candidates invited to attend. Winchester Climate Crisis Alliance has organised the event, focusing on the climate emergency for Winchester. People will have the chance to question each of the candidates. Doors open at 6 p.m. at the United Church on Jury Street, and it will be free and open to everyone. Sir David King, climatologist and former scientific advisor to the government, will give the opening speech. Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor of the University of Winchester, will chair the hustings, ensuring all candidates can set out their plan. A small number of pre-selected questions will be followed by questions from the floor. The government formed from the election will choose whether we continue to contribute to the ecological catastrophe. I do apologise. Someone's got into my brain today. The true nature of the election must be made clear. All the candidates have been invited to attend and answer the questions. They are George Baker, Labour, Steve Bryan, Conservative, Paula Ferguson, Liberal Democrat, and Theresa Skelton, Justice and Anti-Corruption Party. Also invited is Andrew Wainwright, Green Party, who stepped down for the Remain Alliance to give the Lib Dems a clear run. Gemma Barter, Group Coordinator, Friends of the Earth Winchester, said, "Not enough is being done to tackle the climate crisis with the emergency it requires. We need parties to show they are boosting their climate commitments by telling us what they will do for the environment if their party is in charge." Catherine Howlett Davis, spokesman for the Extinction Rebellion Winchester, said, "We are about to vote for the last government that can act effectively on the climate and ecological breakdown. It's vital candidates explain their plan for the next 5 to 10 years. We need real change and not hollow promises." Jock McDonald, chairman of Winchester Action on Climate Change, said, "Win ACC has waited an agonising 10 years for a proper lead from the government debate and action. Now is a must."
And as we are starting to get ready for the festive season, dashing through the streets of Winchester. And this is accompanied by a photograph of lots and lots and lots and lots of Santas. More than 750 people will hit the streets of Winchester on December the 1st for the annual Naomi House and Jack's Place Santa Fun Run. The yearly spectacle is a firm favourite in the local hospice's event calendar and could see as much as £40,000 raised to care for life-limited children and young adults across the Wessex region. Starting at 9 o'clock in the morning, runners in their Santa suits will set off from the Broadway before making their way past King Alfred's statue, past Winchester College, Winchester Cathedral, and sprinting to the finish line down Winchester High Street. Finishers will be greeted with Christmas music, snow, mince pies, and a bespoke medal. The money raised from the event could fund 5 whole days of care at Naomi House Children's Hospice, helping families make the most of the festive season and cope on good days, difficult days, and last days. The charity said it costs around £11,000 to run a full service at the hospices every day, and there is always need for volunteers. The money raised through the initiative will support the charity, which provides hospice care to more than 525 life-limited and life-threatened children, young adults and their families. The Santa Fun Run has grown in popularity over the 11 years it has taken place, with the charity needing to find ever larger venues to accommodate the hundreds of Santas taking part each year. Keith Wilson, head of marketing at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Our Santa Fun Run might just be my favourite event of the year, and the sight of hundreds of Santas jogging past Winchester's many landmarks really kickstarts the festive season in the city." Every participant in the Santa Fun Run will be doing something quite extraordinary to support the region's most medically complex and vulnerable children. There is still time to sign up with friends and family, and I would urge people to do so quickly to secure their place. Online entry to the Winchester Santa Fun Run is open until November the 27th, after which runners will need to register on the day. Places cost £20 for adults and £15 for children, with free Santa suits provided to each participant. Naomi House and Jack's Place is a leading UK hospice charity and currently cares for more than 550 local families. The charity offers respite, emergency, end-of-life and post-bereavement care from its hospices in Sutton Scotney. For more information on Naomi House and Jack's Place and to sign up for the Santa Fun Run, visit naomihouse.org.uk.
Councillors approve plan for new funeral parlour. Controversial plans to turn an Alsford therapy centre into a funeral director's have been approved. Graham Deacon's application for 24 The Dean, the Healthway Centre, was met by 31 objectors who signed a petition saying the building would upset people living in the nearby retirement homes only recently opened. But at Winchester City Council Planning Committee last Thursday, November the 14th, the plans were given the green light by the City Council Committee. The petition, signed mostly by local residents, said, "We, the undersigned, strongly object to the proposed siting of a funeral parlour at 24 The Dean, Alsford. The siting of such a business, both adjacent to and opposite a large number of retirement homes, will have an upsetting emotional impact on many people. There will also be the increased volume of traffic caused by a 24-hour business. It is well documented that the siting of such business in a residential area adversely affects the buying and selling potential of residential properties in the immediate vicinity." Another objector, Clive Earthy, said it doesn't make sense to approve the plans. He said the Dean in Alsford has already started relocating and closing down its commercial companies, businesses, and releasing the land gained for building new residential houses and dwellings, already planned and approved to be built, thus making the Dean area a totally residential accommodation area. So it makes no sense granting at this time permission for a new commercial industrial business to be opened in the Dean, let alone one that could totally depend on a 24-hour transportation access going and coming into this residential area, with already a difficult road junction at the B3046 / the Dean / Jacklins Lane, Alsford.
Doodles do well for cities' neonatal unit. A Winchester-based design agency has chosen the neonatal unit at Royal Hampshire County Hospital to benefit from the doodles created at an event last week. Thursday, that's the name of the company, I'll explain, formerly known as Marmalade on Toast, invited people from the local community to an event celebrating the launch of their new doodling app, Doodle, last Thursday. Attendees were asked to create a doodle, and for each one submitted, £1 was raised for the neonatal unit. A total of £1,540 was raised. The neonatal unit was chosen by Simon Harmer, founder and owner of Thursday. He said, "I have lived in Winchester for nearly 20 years. During that time, I have moved house 6 times, married and had 3 children. As such, my wife Katie and I have spent a large amount of time with the neonatal unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. We have always been thankful, grateful and genuinely amazed by the level of care and attention the staff have given to our entire family over the years. We want to do all we can to support such an amazing place and the people who work there." Sharon Stone, clinical matron of the neonatal unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, said, "We are delighted that Thursday have chosen to support the neonatal unit through this fun and imaginative app. Their support will help us to buy new equipment for the babies and ensure that the unit is a comfortable and welcoming place for parents, relatives and staff. After the event, each unique drawing will be made into a huge piece of artwork, which will be displayed at the design agency's studio in the heart of Winchester City. Mr. Harmer's next ambition is to turn everyone's doodles into the largest piece of artwork in the world. His record-breaking ambition will mean that the final piece of art will need to reach over 4 million square metres, which is the current record set by Ando's Mundo Mun, which would take a staggering 1,527,720 doodles. That's a number that is just eye-watering.
The future of the fire service. Members of the public have a few days left to have their say on the future of Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service. The organisation is carrying out a consultation on its integrated risk management plan, which ends on November the 24th. This plan will be shaped by the views of the public, as well as laying out the areas it will focus on for the next 5 years. The fire and rescue landscape has changed in recent years, and the role of the modern firefighter is also evolving, and Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service is looking at new ways of working. Chief Fire Officer Neil Odin said, "We value the views of people from all of our communities and would urge as many as possible to take part in this important consultation. I am extremely proud of our service, which I believe is among the best in the country, and our hard-working, dedicated teams. Only the public can say whether we are focusing on the things which matter to them, and this is their chance to shape and influence our plans." And to have your say, go to, and this is a very complex address, hantsfire.gov.uk/about-us/integrated-risk-management-plan/. Thank you.
Santa at the Watercress Line this Christmas. The popular Santa specials are returning to the Watercress Line. The steam locomotive will chuff into town, giving families the chance to travel in a festive train carriage with Santa and his jolly helpers on November the 30th and various dates throughout December. Every child on board will receive a gift, as well as a soft drink, gingerbread man, and activity pack to keep them entertained on the one-hour journey, while grown-ups will be treated to white wine and mince pies. Guests of all ages are also asked to bring their very best singing voices to join in with everyone's favourite Christmas songs. Jules Johns, marketing manager at the Watercress Line, said, "It's one of the only Santa experiences where families don't need to queue, and we love seeing children's faces light up when Father Christmas visits them in their seats and delivers presents. The festive spirit will continue after Christmas, with its popular Christmas Leave also returning on December the 26th and 27th. And there's a really lovely photograph of a very jolly Father Christmas all dressed up, with a very happy little girl in his arms, beaming at the camera. And you can see the carriage behind with its red velour seats patterned, and lots of Christmas decorations and tinsel and everything red and green and very bright. Rather good idea.
Decades of service recognised for firemen. A fire commander who has dedicated 45 years to keeping the public safe has been awarded a Queen's Fire Service Medal. Jerry Lennard, Group Manager of Winchester and Tess Valley, joined the service aged 17, following in the footsteps of his father and grandfather. Between them, the trio, Jerry, Jim and George Leonard, notched up more than 100 years in the fire service, but that's not where the family connection ends. Jerry's wife, Ingrid, is also group manager in control. She has worked for Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service for 27 years. Jerry said, "I'm incredibly delighted to have been chosen to receive the Queen's Fire Service Medal. I'm humbled to receive such an honour for a job I love and have enjoyed every minute of in the past 45 years. I never considered any other career. I joined up as soon as I could and have been operational firefighter for all my career. I never would have imagined that I would have had the opportunities that I have had when I started the job." The 62-year-old granddad started his career as an on-call firefighter in 1974, the year they lowered the minimum age for a firefighter from 18 to 17. Among his many achievements, Jerry was founder member of UK Search and Rescue, which has become UK International Search and Rescue. He has been deployed to disasters across the globe, including Armenia, Turkey, Indonesia and Nepal. As well as being a National Urban Search and Rescue Tactical Advisor, he's also a National Hazardous Material Advisor and a National International Liaison Officer. He is also Hampshire's lead in extrication and trauma and has been involved in UK rescue organisation events. the dad of two from Crondall, has attended thousands of calls across Hampshire, working out of stations including Lymington, Redbridge, Andover, St Mary's, Rushmore, Basingstoke and Eastleigh headquarters. His extensive career has also included working in training and equipment. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority Chairman Chris Carter said, "This award recognises a life spent in the service of others. It's hard to imagine in 45 years how many lives he has saved and how many people he has helped." Chief Fire Officer Neil Odin said, "Hampshire firefighters occupy a special place in the heart of the community because of the people like Jerry. I am delighted that he's been given this award to recognise the contribution he's made to making the communities of Hampshire and beyond safer."
The dates for the last M27 closure to allow for works on the new bridge. Highway chiefs have revealed the final M27 closure date for a £19 million project to replace a bridge across the motorway. Bosses at Highways England say they will close the M27 between 10 p.m. on Friday, January the 10th and 5 a.m. on Monday, January the 13th. It will be the final closure for work to replace Romsey Road Bridge, which carries traffic over the motorway between Romsey and Nursling. The motorway has been closed twice so far. The first closure in late 2018 was to demolish part of the old bridge, which highway chiefs say was built in the 1970s and was nearing the end of its life. It was closed again in June this year as engineers fitted the new bridge. The work, which involved manoeuvring the pre-built bridge across the motorway, was completed 17 hours ahead of schedule. However, bosses say they will likely utilise the full closure in January, which will see the motorway closed between Junction 3 for the M271 and Junction 4 for the M3. In a letter, Highways England said, "We have worked closely with Hampshire County Council and Southampton City Council to select the dates for the final M27 Romsey Road Bridge closure to ensure we minimise the impact to local communities and businesses." The demolition of the East Bridge will be taking place from 10 p.m. on Friday, January the 10th, and 5 a.m. on Monday, January the 13th. Please note, however, the Romsey Road Bridge will be closed from 9 p.m. During this time, we'll make full use of the A3057 closure and will undertake work in the vicinity to assist with the progress of the project. We would like to advise that this final closure is likely to utilise the full closure time, and we will be advising people to plan their journeys. And the article is accompanied by a couple of photographs of the earlier demolition work. There is one which has got these monster demolition cranes attacking the bridge back in 2018. And another photograph which is taken looking across the bridge, showing the scale of the engineering work.
Labour choose George. Labour in Winchester have chosen a disabled business owner as their candidate for December the 12th. George Baker believes his unique experience gives him an edge in turning Winchester red for the first time in 74 years. If elected, he will be the first Labour MP for the city since George Geiger, G-E-G-E-R, in 1945, when the constituency was linked with Eastleigh. Mr Baker has always lived in Chandler's Ford and went to university in Winchester. He founded an award-winning media agency which provides training and support to make marketing accessible to all. He says that as a disabled person, he is on the front line of austerity and has seen the effects of the removal of vital public services and benefits from the most vulnerable in society. Mr Baker said, "The biggest challenge facing society right now is undeniably climate change, and whilst the scale of the task is enormous, I believe it is an opportunity to design a future we can be proud of and excited to leave our children." Asked about how his life experiences have informed his politics, he said, I was born with congenital muscular dystrophy, a condition which gives me a unique perspective on politics. My 10 strong staff of carers, medical equipment and technology, such as my wheelchair, that allow me to live an independent and productive life, might seem weird to others, but to me, they are just a reflection of the type of society we should live in, one where we all work together to help and support each other while we build a better world for everybody.
Economic chief hosts lively talk at the college. Students were given an insight into the world of politics and economics as they welcomed a special visitor. Peter Simmons College was visited by Sir Geoffrey Owen, former editor of the Financial Times and current head of the economic think tank, Policy Exchange, for a lunchtime talk and question and answer session earlier this month. Speaking on the topic, From Thatcher Through Blair to Boris Johnson, A Journalist's View of British Politics Since the 1980s, Sir Geoffrey gave an analysis of three key periods of economic change in the UK, 1949, 1979 and 2008, and an insight into how these periods have impacted on the current economic policies of the two main parties. His talk was followed by a lively question and answer session with questions from students covering a wide range of topics, including the upcoming UK election, strengths and weaknesses of capitalism and US politics, among others. Sir Geoffrey Owen is head of the Industrial Policy of Policy Exchange, a UK think tank with a mission to develop and promote new policies, ideas, to deliver better public service, and a stronger society in a more dynamic economy. He's a former editor of the Financial Times and was knighted in 1989. And among his other achievements, he is a visiting professor of practice at the LSE, and he's the author of three books. And there is a picture of Sir Geoffrey Owen, a white-haired, distinguished-looking gentleman, with two of the students who attended the talk.
A music festival aims to expand. A family music festival is vying to increase the number of days it runs, despite concerns from local residents. The organisers of Arsford Music Festival have applied to Winchester City Council to extend the annual event from one day a year to 2 days. The Music and Creative Festival, which this year celebrated its 10th year, attracts thousands of people to Arbury Park. It has built a reputation for making families and first-time festival goers feel extra welcome, providing a safe place to enjoy some of the best and most varied music about. It is understood that the running of the event has now been passed to creative arts company M3 Productions, who have plans to increase the size of the festival. However, the application has been met with a negative response by some living close to the site, worried about the disturbance over the weekend, according to local councillor Russell Gordon-Smith. He said, "There is a bit of a problem, certainly, as it's right next door to residential housing, which houses retired people. McCarthy and Stone opened it earlier this year." Councillor Gordon-Smith added, "There are now more people living in earshot than last year. There are quite a lot of apprehensions from residents living in the Dean that they, the organisers, want it for another day. Residents don't particularly want it to extend. I don't think residents of a certain age who live nearby were very happy about it last year. The feeling was, okay, let people enjoy themselves, but to extend it is the thin end of the wedge." And new Arsford Town Council Chairman, Councillor Keith Duval, said that the authority was aware of the plan and discussed the application at a meeting on Monday. The application is expected to go before the City Council's Licensing Committee for determination at a future meeting. Each year, the festival also offers camping on both Friday and Saturday nights to those who attend, with the campsite based next to a trout stream and overlooks the South Downs, which means people can walk from the town to the site once the entertainment has concluded late into the night. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a whole bunch of people all smiling to the camera and taken at the music festival at Albury Park.
Loyal supporters honoured at Bash. Supporters, volunteers and staff of a Sutton Scotney-based hospice came together for a night of celebration. Naomi House and Jack's Place organised the event to celebrate another year of the charity and have the opportunity to show its appreciation. The over 150 guests enjoyed the night at St Mary's Stadium in Southampton with performances from local swing duo All That Swing and Love Soul Choir. Speeches were also made by two young adults who regularly visit Jack's Place, who explained what the hospice means to them, before awards were given out recognising the long-term support that many generous individuals and corporate companies have shown to the charity over the years. Mark Smith, Chief Executive, said, "We were delighted to be joined by so many loyal supporters who came out to help celebrate our charity in style. We are so proud of how far the hospices have progressed over the years." And there are about eight photographs. We have the Naomi House fundraising team, all smiling, young. And then there's David James, the maintenance volunteer, who got his award, and a member of the Concord Classic Car Show Committee. And Jeremy Edwards with the young adults from Jack's Place. Again, it's obviously an extremely happy evening, smiles all round. A few of the people who benefit from the hospice, and one of two girls, women, older age maybe, dancing the night away, hands in the air with some extraordinary green light that's obviously coming off some disco-type lighting effect. And a large table, in fact, many, many tables of older people seated who have gone to this bash.
Success for all pupils at Winnell. Standing on the pavement of Garbett Road, you can't see much of Winnell Primary School. But what lies behind the double doors is a home to a tight-knit family of staff and pupils. It's the Winchester School that brings in children from all kinds of backgrounds, providing them with a wide range of opportunities throughout Key Stage 1 and 2. Head teacher Alison Rose, who has spent almost 3 years in the post, says that staff share a core belief that every child is able to succeed and has potential to achieve great things. She added, "It really is a great school and it doesn't take long to warm to the fantastic family feel." Rather than giving each subject a set name, the curriculum is taught by asking a big question, which allows children to explore topics in a way that interests and inspires them. They're also taught by a professional sports coach, learn French from year one, and have regular chances to perform. From in-house festive shows to opening a stage at Boomtown Festival. Attendance is a huge focus at the school, with weekly awards given to classes who show good attendance as well as the most improved. The most recent Ofsted report in May rated the school as good and said, "Your vision is for everyone, pupils and staff, to be the very best versions of themselves." And then it's hear from the head. At Winnell Primary School, we believe in achieving our best together. As an inclusive one-form entry primary school, we really get to know all of our pupils as individuals and work in partnership with parents and carers to ensure that every individual achieves their best. Children's voices are heard in our school and our junior governors represent their classes, meeting regularly with our school governors to discuss ways the school can improve. We encourage children to take part in local events. Children at Winnell Primary School have taken part in the Hat Fair. They have entered dance competitions locally and have even performed on the Lion's Den stage at the Boomtown Festival. Local charities are also supported, including the Night Shelter, Trinity and the Salvation Army, who also run a daily breakfast club. Children also take responsibility for different aspects of the school, as sports leaders, environmental leaders and anti-bullying ambassadors. Our sports coach encourages children to take part in many varied activities and we enjoy local competition with other schools. Parents are encouraged to take an active role in their child's learning, and a recent introduction of home learning, where families often work together on a project together, has inspired children's learning in classes. We are committed to supporting families wherever we can through the work of our family support worker. Winnell is very much a school where we put children at the heart of everything we do. And there is a number of pictures. One of the head teacher, Alison Rhodes, and then there's pupils showing off their work. It looks like it's sort of knitting. Playing with toys in the sandpit. The house captains in the welcoming school reception area. Playing on the outdoor adventure trail. And Hero the monkey is always up for a photo, apparently. And then there are three dear little girls holding up their library books, one called Autumn, and the ladybag girl. And I can't read the other one because it looks like it might be a Harry Potter one. Reading time in the library, all happy and smiling.
So a school project thanks the lottery as it celebrates its 25th birthday. A Winchester environmental organisation has joined a host of nature and wildlife projects across the region to shine a light on 25 years of national lottery support. Pollination, an initiative by Learning Through Landscapes, designed to improve the habitat for bees and other pollinating insects, is just one of the 1,470 projects from across the region that has benefited from £74.8 million raised by National Lottery players for wildlife and nature projects since the first draw in 1994. To celebrate the National Lottery's 25th birthday, the city-based organisation has spoken about how the funding has helped them. The pollination scheme involved 260 schools that worked to improve the habitat for bees and other pollinating insects. As well as improving life for wildlife, it had a profound impact on the children involved. Olivia, aged 11, who took part, said, "When I came here, I developed this absolute love for everything outdoors. I started to speak up more, and I spoke about my love for pollinators. It has given me a real confidence boost." Mary Jackson, projects manager at Learning Through Landscapes, said, "Our pollination project has helped 35,000 children and young people to experience awe and wonder in the natural world. The grant we received from the National Lottery Heritage Fund enabled us to work with 260 school communities to create new wildfly meadows, build bug hotels, and grow a wide variety of plants and trees, all to support pollinating insects. Through the project, pupils across the nation champion the critically important roles of pollinators on local radio, whilst others linked up with beekeepers to ensure a continuation of the ancient craft to the next generation. Pollination improved school settings and created the conditions for pollinators to thrive, but its greatest impact was on the children and young people involved. They have become a passionate army of knowledgeable enthusiasts who will advocate for our pollinating insects for many years to come. Learning Through Landscapes is delighted to wish the National Lottery a very special 25th anniversary.
Closed post office to reopen. A post office which closed in controversial circumstances is set to reopen next week. The service at the Fryon Arcade in Chandler's Ford was closed on Wednesday, October the 23rd, due to disputes over the postmaster's position. Residents and councillors were left outraged by the decision, describing the short notice of the closure as completely unacceptable. After pressure from the Chandler's Ford community in the form of 1,700 written signatures to save the service, the post office head office has announced that the branch will return over the festive period. A post office spokesperson said, "We are pleased to announce that the Fryon Hill post office is due to reopen early next week. The precise date is being finalised. Fryon Hill Post Office will be operated by a temporary postmaster whilst we continue to look for a permanent solution. We apologise for any inconvenience caused by the temporary closure of Fryon Hill due to the resignation of the postmaster. We have been working hard to restore a service to the area as quickly as possible. Aaron Joseph, who acted as the stand-in manager for a year before the closure, has allowed the post office to continue existing inside of his shop under the management of a temporary postmaster until a permanent solution is found.
Phone mast to stay 12 months. A temporary telephone signal mast in Winchester will remain for another 12 months, despite objections. Winchester City Council approved Cornerstone and Vodafone Limited's application to keep the mast on Andover Road, close to the junction with Berwick Road and in Wick. It is being used as a stopgap in an emergency whilst a permanent solution is found. The application had received seven objections, including one by City Councillor Anne Weir, who said permission for this temporary emergency phone mast has been renewed previously. It is time the mast was either removed and resited, or a full application for permanent installation with associated landscaping and amenities was submitted. This application should be refused. The City of Winchester Trust also submitted an objection. The Trust said, the Trust objects to this further extension on the grounds that the mast and the associated barriers compromise local amenity and are an eyesore. In the Trust's opinion, any further application should only be considered on the basis that the site would be suitably landscaped and temporary barriers replaced by planting screening. Consideration should also be given to using a fake tree phone mast.
And we have here a full-page spread on the Winchester Christmas lights switch-on. A festive feel brought to city at switch-on. Festive spirit returned to Winchester as crowds gathered to enjoy the city's annual lights switch-on on Thursday. Held in the Broadway, this year's events were hosted by Hearts Radio Johnny Mee, who was joined by three local heroes, Natalie Devereaux, Pamela Christmas, and Michael Day, who were all nominated by the public through a competition to turn on the lights. The night was filled with festive fun, with Santa's sleigh and wonderful live performances, along with market stalls. Sarah Davis, Winchester's BID Projects and Operations Manager, said it was wonderful to see the entire community come together to start the festive season. And there's a whole array of photographs here. We've got Santa's sleigh blowing out snow. We've got a roundabout for the young kiddies to enjoy. We've got a couple of ladies here who are on stilts, festive performers roaming around. We've got the lights in the high street. We've even got a furry friend involved here. Somebody's brought their dog along. And we've got school choirs taking to the stage. And we've got other people entertaining the crowds. And, of course, finally, there is the big switch-on when the lights were actually switched on.
Rotary appeal for Christmas toys. A total of 396 shoeboxes have been collected by Winchester Rotary, mostly from the schools. They were Compton CE Primary, Henry Beaufort, St Bede's CE Primary, St Faith CE Primary, Week Primary, Western Primary and Minnie Marvel's Toddlers Group. Boxes also arrived from a number of individuals who support the appeal each year. Also donated were some 190 woolen jumpers, hats, gloves and blankets knitted by members of Four Marks Women's Institute and Alsford Lacemakers and Friends, an annual donation organised by Hilary Dunwoody. Donations have been delivered to the depot in Dorset, where over 25,000 decorated boxes containing small gifts and useful items to be delivered soon to disadvantaged children in Albania, Montenegro, Moldova and Romania. Hilary Dunwoody, with Winchester Rotarians Mike Billington, Club President, and Colin Cook. Oh, Shoebox Corner. That is actually the description of the photograph. Doesn't appear under the photograph, it just appears on the end of the line, the article. But there's lots of big plastic bags full of goodies, jumpers, and all the boxes and shelves above them.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thanks to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Excuse me. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.